Miracle Cure. And I'm your host, Barbara. I'm here with Dr. Frank.
Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Dr. Frank, and welcome to LA Miracle Cure.
It's a pleasure being here.
Well, it is a pleasure to have you. I am so excited that you have taken out this time. We're deep in Beverly Hills right now, and we're talking to a doctor. Tell us a little bit about your medical history.
All right, Barbara, I am a board-certified orthopedic spine surgeon. Did my medical school training at Albany Medical College, Albany, New York. Did an internship in surgical residency at NYU Bellevue, then Kings County. Then I did 4 years of orthopedic surgery training at the Beth Israel Medical Center in downtown Manhattan, followed by a one-year spine fellowship at Rancho Los Amigos in Downey, California. That's how I got out to the West Coast, and I haven't returned to New York since.
Wow. Well, I tell you, I am just in awe of your credentials. I've heard of every one of those places that you have had an opportunity to be educated by.
Fabulous.
And I'm just excited we have not had someone on our show as of yet who has the medical certification to speak to cannabis as you can.
Well, I'll tell you, no part of my training, no part of medical school, residency, any of that, could I have predicted would have brought me to this point. Cannabis is as far afield from what I was trained to do as you could get in medicine. It's not even internal medicine, where you are trained to recognize asthma and hypertension and how to treat all that. None of that. That's what the internists did. We were trained as surgeons that everything can be fixed with a knife, which is, you know, how a surgeon is supposed to be trained, but it really, in a way, is very, very limiting. And so you always believe that with a knife, again, I always use the analogy that when you become a surgeon, because you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So you go out of your way to try to figure out why to operate on someone. And that's really not what medicine should be. Medicine is not just about taking a knife to someone because you can. Medicine is about treating the entire body, the entire person.
Absolutely, including prevention.
Absolutely.
Preventative medicine.
There's nothing preventative about surgery.
Mm.
I mean, surgery is the answer. You're either taking something out, so you're not preventing something from happening, you're taking something out or fixing something that's broke. So after a career of doing an enormous amount of surgeries, I came to realize is that, especially in spine surgery, where you're sitting there, you have these amazing x-rays, and they look really fabulous, but at the end of the day, the people who come in for relief of pain are still in pain. So you've done something beautiful for an x-ray, but you really didn't do anything for the patient. So I got to the point where I realized that spine surgery, I'm not really sure works. I mean, there's a couple of cases where it might be beneficial, but for the most part, not really sure it works.
Well, let me ask you this question. So when you look at a surgery from your perspective, then you see that I've always thought that just intrusion into the body can cause like a malady, such as inflammation. Such as, I mean, these are all ancillary problems that the patient would have down the way just from the surgery. Not from the problem that they come to see the doctor for, but because they've had the surgery and they have an open problem that needs to heal. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword.
Well, again, you're using double-edged, and we are doing surgery, so that's one thing. Number two, there is no question that there are circumstances where surgery is very important. But what I have found specifically with spine surgery, it's almost like the sequelae, in my mind, to the surgery is like the cover-up being worse than the crime.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems to me, and this is after a long experience of doing spine surgery and just seeing people coming back into the office after surgery, if not in the same amount of pain and worse pain, it makes what you do in my mind, less valuable. I mean, it's wonderful to be able to do these things.
Yes.
But
because you've seen miracles happen.
It happens.
Yes.
It happens. But I'm not sure it happens enough to justify the amount of surgery that's being done in the United States at this particular point in time.
I see.
I think there's far too much surgery being done.
And as we sit in Beverly Hills, I think this is one of the places, I mean, where there's even a question. As a makeup artist, everybody knows that I've been for many years a makeup artist, and I work with a lot of people who've had a lot of surgery. And I'm talking about cosmetic and surgery that's not necessary. It's, you know, it's because you want to, or because you're trying to fix a problem, or you're trying to get further in your career. Just explain to us, what does it mean to be board certified?
Well, you have to pass a certain amount of requirements as far as time spent in that particular field. And then there's testing, both written testing as well as oral testing, being grilled by professors or by people who have already passed through this particular phase of their training. And then you get board certification. And they give you a certification that you've been recognized by the board. And it's, listen, it's fabulous. It's a wonderful feather to put in your cap.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, Barbara, quite frankly, what I do now, and seeing people every day for cannabis evaluations, is so much more satisfying than anything I ever did in surgery. It doesn't even really compare. I mean, the people that I see today have forced me to learn medicine. Not just surgery, medicine. The people I see who come in with a variety of ailments, rare ailments, common ailments, the treatments, the medications they're taking, I've gotten a chance to actually learn medicine again. Learn it the way I probably should have learned it the first time, and not be so quick with the knife.
I love it.
It's so wonderful. You have no idea. Be able to sit there and talk to someone about a disease that I would never, ever have even remembered, let alone are treating or helping to treat with cannabis. It is so rewarding. I can't even begin to tell you how fabulous it is.
Well, let me ask you this question. Let's get right to the meat. So when you say treating, so let's say if you think about the patients that you are already treating at this point.
Right.
What would you say are the three common complaints that you're seeing right now?
The most common complaints are chronic pain, anxiety, and sleep. None of which are valid reasons to get cannabis in over 50% of the states that have medical cannabis at this particular point. There's an enormous amount of states who will only let you use cannabis, let doctors use cannabis, and not be able to use their judgment to see whether it would be an appropriate treatment for a variety of illnesses. They're going to give you a state-mandated list. You can only use it if you have ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease. The amount of people in this country who have Lou Gehrig's disease, luckily, thank God, is minuscule. You want to give the cannabis to these people? Absolutely. Huntington's chorea. Chorea is like an involuntary motions of the arms. It makes you look like you're dancing. That's where chorea and choreography comes from. It's a central nervous system issue that allows you to, that it destroys or it interrupts your ability to control the movements of your extremities. These are incredibly rare disease processes. These are indicated for use of cannabis in a majority of the states. They had to fight in Colorado, where it is absolutely legal to use cannabis in a recreational fashion. Meaning, recreational meaning only, you don't use a doctor's recommendation letter to get the cannabis. They had a fight to get post-traumatic stress disorder as a reason for a physician to give cannabis to a wounded veteran, to a woman who has been involved in sexual abuse, to a child who has been involved in domestic violence. That's not good enough to have a physician be able to say, you know what, you can benefit from this. They had a fight to this in Colorado. It's legal anyway. So when I tell you the three most common maladies that I'm treating are chronic pain, which is not available for cannabis in most of the medical states, anxiety, which is not available in most medical states, as well as insomnia, it's crazy to me that these are the three most common reasons why people in California and Nevada are using cannabis, and yet the physicians in most of the medical states, over half of the medical states, aren't even given that as legitimate reasons to prescribe or to at least give people medical access to cannabis in those states. It's a travesty.
So, very interesting, because this is what we're seeing. We're seeing that there are about 34 states that we're really actually discussing that have medical cannabis on board. So can you give us a better understanding of what is a prescription? Now, we do understand that with a doctor's note, I think we're probably just at the beginning stages of getting this. So open our eyes to understanding what is a real prescription, what is a medical card, how do you get it, and link the two together, and what do I show up with at the dispensary?
At this point, there are 29 states that either have medical or recreational cannabis available. There are seven states that will be on the ballot next year to get it up to the 34 to 35 range. That should be done by the end of next year. Cannabis is a Schedule I drug. 1972, President Nixon, when he created the Drug Enforcement Agency, contrary to everything he was told by the judges and by the scientists, said that cannabis is not really a very dangerous drug at all. For political reasons, from what I'm told, in order to control the hippie population, made it a Schedule I drug, meaning that it is the equivalent of heroin and LSD, meaning that it has absolutely no medical benefit whatsoever. Even to this day, it is still a Schedule I drug. So that means in the past 45 years, despite everything that we know, it has not changed its status at the DEA. Because it's a Schedule I drug, by law, a physician cannot write a prescription for the use of cannabis, cannot tell dosage, cannot use strain, cannot in any way tell a patient how to use the cannabis. The only thing we're allowed to do by law is to give someone access through a recommendation letter. It's not a prescription. I can't prescribe cannabis. The only thing I can do is, because it's a Schedule I drug, give you a letter that says that I think that if used responsibly and you are a responsible patient, you will be able to gain access to cannabis, feel free to do with what you want. Patient says, well, doc, what strain should I use? I can't tell you. I have absolutely no idea. Well, doc, how often should I take it? I can't tell you. No physician at this point in time in this country has the ability to write a prescription for cannabis, give dosage, or any type of medical advice. There are doctors who do. Unfortunately, they're putting themselves at risk. Even though they think they're helping the patients, they're putting their careers at risk, because all the DEA wants to do is see that you're stepping over the line of what you can do as a physician.
Ah, so let's talk about risk. Now, risk, meaning to your professional license, meaning to how you do business. How do you become someone who can give this letter? Does that put you under scrutiny, higher scrutiny, do you think?
I would imagine it would.
Yes.
Any physician, no matter what your training, because I have no training in internal medicine other than what I did in medical school and during my internship. I have no training in this area. This is something that I had to learn. I mean, the fact that I am a licensed physician gave me the opportunity to be able to do this. And I essentially taught myself. I went to as many seminars as I could go to. I interviewed as many people as I can interview and talk to them. I went to the dispensaries to speak to patients. And so I essentially self-taught.
So basically you used a method that is used in psychology, which is called qualitative. You did interviewing and you did observation from your professional standpoint to be able to figure out exactly what was good for what. And then you were able to implement that with your patients, or you don't have to answer that, but what you can say is, do you feel that people are being given a disservice when they're not being able to use natural products to heal themselves?
When I was a practicing spine surgeon, people would say to me, well, how do you feel about chiropractors? Well, I would say, well, look, if someone gets better with a chiropractor, they don't need me. I'm a knife. What about acupuncture? If someone gets better with acupuncture, they don't need me. Let's extend that. If someone gets better with cannabis, they got better. So you don't need other things. If there is something out there in the world, whether it's a root, herb, cannabis plant, whatever it is, if you can use something that makes your life better and makes you feel better, use it.
Wow. Dr. Frank, this has really been eye-opening.
For me, too.
Yes. And you're listening to LA Miracle Cure, and we will be right back. We're here with Dr. Frank, and we'll hear all about cannabis and medical use.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And we're back with Dr. Frank. Dr. Frank.
Yes.
Now, how I became acquainted with you was a very interesting thing. And this interesting thing is based off of my inquiry for young people who have seizures and who have Tourette syndrome and who have whose parents are really struggling to try to manage their children and the disease and their temperament and still allow them to have some resonance of a childhood and be accepted in school and church and wherever they present themselves. And I happened to notice this young lady, her name, I'm just going to say Miss A. She's 11 years old, and her father had to literally come over the state line to find someone to help treat her, and she had severe seizures. So if you could expound a little bit about this Miss A.
Miss A is a child who was living in a state where cannabis was not legal, either medicinally or from the recreational standpoint. She, after exhaustive use of what they call standard medicine, standard pharmaceuticals, with all the associated side effects, the decided to try cannabis. Her family took her from whatever state she was in and brought her to Colorado. In Colorado, she was able to get access to cannabis. She went from having 15 to 20 seizures a day to the point where I interviewed her, where she had no seizures for almost 7 months. So obviously there was some medicinal benefit to the cannabis. She took it upon herself as an 11-year-old to file a lawsuit against the Department of Justice and Attorney General Jeff Sessions to question why they are stopping cannabis from being legal as a medicine to help children like herself. So I interviewed her, and again, it was a wonderful experience for me. I know she's been interviewed a lot. I have absolutely no idea what the experience was like for her. But for me, to see someone at this age so passionate, and it's not about just getting publicity. It's not about getting money for speaking tours because you're now a public figure. This is about fighting for what's right in the United States and getting access to medicine that is not available in the state you live in. With regards to cannabis, we are absolutely not the United States of America. You can be in a state where Main Street goes down and there's one side of the street is one state, one is the other. And depending on what side of the street you're on, you can get access to cannabis legally. That's not right. That's what this young girl is standing up for. And the reason why I do interviews with children like this is and adults like this who have passionate about cannabis is because it's not about me. It's not about you. It's not about what we do as personalities in the media world. Excuse me. It's about these people. And their story needs to be told. And so when we did the interview with this young girl, I asked one question during the interview. And the rest of it was her. This is all about you. I want people to see you because I want people to see who may be in the exact same situation, parents, young children, in the exact same situation. Don't listen to the doctor. Don't listen to what I have to say. Listen to someone who is you, someone who's in the exact same situation that you are in. Let them tell you what's going on. All of the interviews that I do with these children, with these families, it's their story. All I want to be is a conduit. I'm not going to be around forever. But the disease processes will be. These stories will continue to occur. These people who are living through these nightmares, the children and the parents, need to be able to tell their stories so that other parents can say, all right, maybe this is for me.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, you know, that make decisions or make judgments, because now for the first time, you know, we have social media. We're able to gain access to information, but we don't really have the paper with the person or the journalist who is held to a certain standard that writes a journal that we follow, that we understand their positioning, and we understand the information when it's read. So all of us are making these judgments without ever coming in contact with a child that has seizures or with parents that are dealing with a child who has a uncontrollable breakdown in their behavior.
Autism, seizures, attention deficit disorder, all of these things.
Yes.
We have so many children who, listen, the spectrum for autism, for example, so it's a wide spectrum. And the majority of children can be managed through behavioral training and through diet and through the love of the family. But there is a percentage of that bell curve, of that spectrum, that needs medicine. And so we, at this particular point, have adopted the Western medical philosophy of jam with pills, give them the pills, give them the pills, give them the pills. Well, the pills have side effects. It's the same thing. It's the cover-up is worse than the crime in some cases. And a lot of these pills, a lot of these pharmaceuticals are the cover-up with untoward side effects.
No.
So if you have cannabis as part of your armamentarium, you can eliminate the potential side effects of the pharmaceuticals and you see positive results. We need to embrace this. We need to study this. and we need to make this a priority for our children. They always say that children are our future. Well, why don't we give them that future? What is the downside to doing a little bit of research and figuring out if this will help these children? And the only way we're going to get this research done is getting the cannabis off of Schedule 1, because Schedule 1 drugs cannot be adequately, legally, federally investigated because they're Schedule 1 drugs.
All right. Now I have a two-part question for you. We'll save the Schedule 1 for at the end of this segment. Right now I want to talk to you. As a board-certified spinal orthopedic surgeon, let's talk about opioids. And where do you think our country is in? I was told before that one prescription, if it's followed through to the nth of the law of the person who is overcoming a surgery, let's say, on the second prescription, some people can be hooked. What is your thoughts?
Well, I've actually read papers where just a single prescription of 20 opioid tablets for someone who goes into an emergency room is enough to start the addiction process.
Right. And when we talk about this, we're talking about Norco, we're talking about OxyContin. Give us a few names.
It doesn't even have to be that high, because those are some high-level pills. Mm-hmm. You can go with Lortabs, Vicodins, Darvocet, low-level pills. The addiction to opioids is, it's anyone is capable of becoming addicted to opioids with a single prescription of 20 to 40 pills.
That's unbelievable.
That's what I have seen. I've seen it in my practice. Mm-hmm. I've seen it in the research that I've seen.
So now that we've established, which we all know, that because we have gotten a rude awakening, it's just not too long ago, 60 Minutes, put it right out there and had the White House respond to this epidemic that has hit the United States. Do you think by chance that cannabis could be the interim? It could break that addiction cycle? Could you go so far as to say that? Or would you say that it should be used in place of, or do you think it's a case-by-case scenario in dealing with pain?
I'm going to give you a wishy-washy answer to this. I believe that the answer to the opioid epidemic in this country is cannabis. Oh, wait a second. That's not wishy-washy. That's fairly definitive. I believe that if given the opportunity under medical care with cannabis, I can get any patient in this country off of opioids, alcohol, heroin. Given the opportunity, I can do that.
I believe it. Because we have talked a little bit, for all of our listeners out there that listen regularly, you can go to our show last week with Matt Hatchkins, and he is a laboratory specialist. He tests cannabis and breaks it down. And he talked a little bit about the cannabinoids and how the terpenes and how the THC works with the CBD and how everything kind of goes together to give you the full medicinal effect. You can't just take it apart and say, well, the CBD is good because it doesn't give that other ancillary effect. All the effects work together for the
entourage effect.
Yeah, exactly. That was the word he used.
It's like this show on HBO.
Yes, the entourage. I love it. So, all right. So let's say,
okay,
Schedule 1, no more.
Got it.
So now we have the biggest problem.
Which is?
Big Pharma, because they're coming. Gangbusters. And they are going to come in, and then can they create a patent on something that God makes and grows in the ground?
The United States government owns the only patent on cannabis. And they got their patent because cannabis, according to their patent, says that it works medicinally for an enormous amount of different ailments. The same United States government that has put it as a Schedule 1 drug in the DEA that says it has no medicinal value. So the United States government has the patent for cannabis as a medicine, yet is keeping it in Schedule 1, so it's not a medicine. Can another company come in and get a patent? Theoretically, yes, but it will never supersede the United States government patent that it already has.
I see. Very interesting. Well, let's talk about L.A. Because
as, I love L.A.
As we, I do too.
Love L.A.
Now, I'm not an Angeleno, but I wouldn't tell Angelenos I'm not.
What does that mean? What is an Angeleno? Do you have to be born here to be an Angeleno?
Well, I'm not quite sure, but trust me. The Angelenos that are here are in anticipation, and I'm talking about business owners and those that are working in cannabis, are projected in the next year from 2018 start January 1 to make about $5 billion in this county of 88 cities alone.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the medical profession, how will their role play out in this sea of recreational marijuana?
In my opinion, if you're interested in cannabis as a medicine, and if the goal is to get people access to cannabis so they don't go to jail, so you're not using it as a racial profiling tool, you're not putting people in jail for nonviolent offense because of a plant, and if your goal in life is to gain is to just make sure that patients have access to medicine, regardless of whether you use it recreationally or medically, it should make no difference to you. It makes no difference to me. If on January 1st, everybody in Southern California, California, has access to cannabis, that supersedes everything else. Because this is always about, in my mind as a physician, this is about access. This isn't about money. That's what the taxes are for. That's where we're going to get drawn in. That's where we're going to have the problem, is that people who are not in this for the right reasons are going to try to figure out how to make the biggest bang for your buck. And that's why the taxes, January 1st, if you go recreationally, are going to be somewhere between 40 and 60%. So people who for 20 years now, since the Compassionate Use Act passed in 1996, have been used to paying a certain amount of money for cannabis. They get a doctor's recommendation letter, and they get it for a certain price. If they choose not to get a doctor's recommendation letter, because there will still be medical, and they choose to go recreational, they're going to be paying an enormous amount of money extra. I don't believe after 21 years that that's going to fly. So I think that what we're creating, because potentially of the greed that is going to be associated with this industry, from the tax standpoint, with the state government, the excise tax, the local government, the county government, all these different people who want a little piece of the pie, I think what we're going to do is ultimately foster the black market again. That's what I think is going to happen.
And when you say the black market, you're saying, because I believe, now everybody knows that I'm from Oakland, and so,
well, I didn't know that. What part of
Lake Merritt. Of course.
Okay.
Being that I'm from Oakland, I have seen a lot of disparity. I mean, I do know people right now who are in San Quentin doing time for having, you know, several bags. Because if it's individually wrapped, you know, that's distribution and that's for sale. And then they end up with, you know, 10, 15 years in prison. I know people right now who are doing time for that. And I'm very interested in what do you think is going to happen? Because I remember voting. And when I voted so that there was a lessening of this law, so that people who were already incarcerated could come back into society and maybe even participate.
There were two reasons to vote for Prop 64. Only two. Number one, there would be a retroactive release of nonviolent criminals who were racially profiled, placed in jail for the use and possession of small amounts of cannabis. They were going to retroactively rescind all of these sentences and let people get out of jail. That's a reason to vote for Prop 64. The second reason to vote Prop 64 is because regardless of what county you live in and the rules in that county, you have the state-granted right to grow 6 plants of your own. And the reason why that's important is because we know that at some point, big tobacco, big corporations are going to come into this state, and they're going to be able to grow cannabis, and they're going to do whatever they want, because that's just the way the world is. And I'm okay with that, but that becomes a monopoly. And the way you eliminate the monopoly is by allowing the patients to grow their own medicine. Because if the patients grow their own medicine, you can never have a big monopoly. Those are the only two reasons why I voted for Prop 64. I still haven't seen everybody get out of jail. This was racially profiled. It's directed to African American and Hispanic American men. 4-1. 4-1 African American men to Caucasians were put in jail for the possession of cannabis. Has to stop. That ain't right. You want to keep this country from blowing up? You do the right thing. And that's why I voted for it. But the rest of it is 50% tax. It's a money grab.
It's a money grab. And we'll be right back, and we're going to talk about who's grabbing the money. You're listening to LA Miracle Cure, and I'm Barbara, and I'm here with Dr. Frank.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, Dr. Frank, I've just handed you the list from California Cannabis Bureau of Control.
And what does this mean?
Well, as a doctor, as you are, you wouldn't maybe know what happens or what is going to be required by the new laws that are made in California for a dispensary owner to dispense, whether it be recreational or whether it be medical cannabis. And this I just gave you is just recently released from Lori Ajax, who is over the control. So now that you see what we're looking at right now what you need to know about how to get your license to dispense.
To be a dispensary.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, let me just let the audience know that no physician is allowed to make one penny on the sale of cannabis. You cannot invest in a grow, in the cultivation, in the extraction, in the distribution, the sale, transportation, in any way. You are not allowed to do that. Doctors who get swept up in this enormous money pool that's about to be generated, who believe that they can make money from this, are putting their license at risk. I would warn any doctor out there, don't do it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. So you're showing me a list of what it's going to take and the rules for being a dispensary in the state of California.
Absolutely.
And it's a one page, it's back and forth, but it's essentially a checklist of what you have to do if you would like to get into this industry.
Exactly. And that's for the state.
That's for the state.
That does not include what is required for the city and for the county.
Okay.
So there are several hoops that these dispensaries are going to have to go through.
Right.
And we as citizens are good with these hoops, I guess, because we want to feel...
They're just hoops.
That, yes, exactly. We want to feel that people are in compliance.
Right.
But the compliance is really very detailed and very difficult for most people who really love the plant, have the knowledge of the plant, and want to go forward with the procurement of the business.
Okay. But this is still a Schedule I drug. And if you would like to get into the business of distributing a Schedule I drug in the state of California, most populous state in the country, where there's an enormous upside financially, theoretically, by entering this business, if they make it difficult and you succeed, you're in. Ultimately, I tell my kids all the time in life, anything that's hard isn't easy. Otherwise, everybody would do it. You're making this hard. You want to do this? These are the rules. Okay. I'm not sure that the rules are overly restrictive. The problem with the rules, especially with fingerprints and all this kind of stuff, is now you're essentially in a database. I mean, that's always my problem.
Yeah.
You know, remember Stallone in First Blood? He wouldn't let get the fingerprints make you take. Remember that?
Yes.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Exactly.
But if this is your passion, if you think this is a job you can do well, and you can take care of your family and your future financially with this, and these are your rules, if that's what you want, you're going in eyes open. This isn't hidden. You go do the rules. I don't see these as being exclusive racially. These are the same rules for everybody. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot here. But this
exactly.
is a big business. You just said to yourself, it's $5 billion in the next 2 years.
Exactly.
You want a piece of the pie. Like I tell the wife all the time, you get what you pay for in life. You put yourself out there. You're doing all the things you're supposed to do. As long as you don't cross the line. There's no reason to cross the line. Do what you're supposed to do. If this is your future and this is your business, do it.
So my question by sharing this with you is, being that you come from the medical side of things and you have patients, it's very interesting to know what the pharmacia or what the dispensary has to go through to even be able to fill the prescription for a patient. So now we're looking at more of a corporate pulling together of these dispensaries. It's going to have to be more than just the gentleman who has a farm up in, let's say, Humboldt, that comes down with this beautiful plant. The romance is gone. And even with wine, think about this. Even with wine, we romance the wine. It's nothing like going to Napa Valley and going through and hearing the stories.
It's still corporate America. This is a plant that is still federally legal. There's a certain romance to the bad boy, right? I mean, cannabis is the bad boy. You know, everybody, you know, likes the bad boy. It's getting more on the ground. We've got this, like, underground network of people who know how to get cannabis. This is the environment you've grown up with for the past 40, 50 years in the United States.
Absolutely.
The legalization of recreational cannabis is inviting corporate America to the table. Well, corporate America's got all the money. When they get here, what do you think's going to happen? It's not going to be bad boy stuff anymore. Now it's going to be corporate America.
Okay, well, we know that when we look at some of the laws that have favored corporate America, such as Citizen United, where a corporation sits at the political table as a person. We know that, and so they have a right to do business, just as I have a right to breathe. So the point that I'm making here is, from a medical standpoint, where do you see the division? In my mind, it's almost like a fork in the road is happening. I just don't see that a person that is an enthusiast that wants to have the certain delivery system to give them the high, to enjoy the concert, to, I've come from New York and all I want to do is kick it in LA, opposed to someone who's fighting cancer, who is riddled with pain, who has PTSD, yes, and who is suffering from autism, and I'm there for my child. How do you think this is going to play out with all of us waiting in line?
First thing I'd like to say is that the concept of calling cannabis recreational, to me, does an enormous disservice to the plant. Because even though you may be using it for the THC and the psychotropic effects, psychoactive effects rather, you're still getting the CBD. So you may be at this concert dancing around having the time of your life listening to Melissa Etheridge talking about coming to her window. But while you're there and you've got this high, your body's still getting the CBD. So you're still getting the medicine, the good part of the medicine and the entourage effect. So to call something recreational, just because you're going for that, doesn't dismiss the fact that you're still getting the medicine. That's number one. Number two, I think that all things being equal, the only difference between the use of recreational cannabis for someone with cancer and a medical recommendation, medical use of cannabis for cancer, is the price of the cannabis. That's it. Because if a cancer patient can get a recreational and still get the medical effects, perfect. The problem is that an enormous amount of the patients who are using cannabis medically are on fixed income, they're on disability. They can't afford this. They can't afford an extra 60% tax. So if you stick these people with a 60% tax when they can't afford it, once again, you're creating the black market. So what we're doing right now by legalizing and getting corporate America involved, we're going to lower the price ultimately of the cannabis because there's going to be so much. We'll drive out some of the mom and pops who don't want to fill out all these forms. When it gets down to the actual patient, if the cost to the medical patient between using medical cannabis as opposed to recreational cannabis, and there's no difference, go for it.
Well, you know, as I speak to our guest last week, Matt was very clear that in this list of laws that I gave you, that there will be no cottage kitchens. A cottage kitchen would be a kitchen that allows me to make cookies, medicinal cookies and rubs and tinctures and all the things that I'm really good at. Not me personally, but I'm saying I'm speaking for a group of people who make edibles, which is a big business in cannabis and in recovery if you're dealing with cancer, if you're having problems with nausea, or if you're having problems with sleeping. You can eat cookies or pies or cakes or whatever. He says that because of this law, that 80% of the edibles are going to go out of business as of the 1st of January.
The current people who are involved in this, corporate America is going to come in, and they'll fill in the void. This is a money play. Don't ever think that the reason we're getting access to cannabis recreation in California has anything to do with anything but money. This is all this is. The only reason that we voted for this, at least that I voted for it, is to get the kids out of jail who've been wrongly put in there and to get people access to grow. Everything else is about money.
Exactly.
Don't kid yourself. I grant that, listen, these people who have built these businesses, built their lives about doing edibles and that kind of stuff, yeah, they're going to go out of business, and as soon as that void is there, corporate America's coming in. Don't kid yourself.
So let me ask you, now that we've talked about so many different parts of this, I mean, I could talk to you forever. You're just a wealth of information.
I really am. I'm something very, very special.
Absolutely. And we know you have a podcast as well.
I do. Well, I have a television show on UBN, Universal Broadcast Network. It's an online internet television station every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time. It's called Elevate the Conversation with Dr. Frank. And what we try to do is bring in people to talk about the cannabis industry. Let's talk about it. The most important thing we can do in this is not make money, but educate. This is about getting people access to cannabis. Have them flip the switch. Everybody's got a switch. They've never in their lives used cannabis. That something changes. Something happens. Friend gets cancer. You get cancer. You get dementia. Something happens. And then all of these negative thoughts about cancer, about cannabis, all of these propaganda driven bad thoughts about reefer madness and all this nonsense and about the jazz singers and all this crap that we've been drilled for years, switch goes on. What's the switch? What made you change your thought? And there are people out there, Barbara, I want to be the switch.
Absolutely.
I want to be the switch.
Absolutely. With the right information.
It's all about information.
Exactly.
Let's take the money out of this. What's the switch? Let me educate you. Let me tell you why this works. And if at the end of this, of all of this, we get people to be able to get access to cannabis, whether it's from a medical recommendation letter or recreationally, as long as there's no difference in price, I walk away from this industry as far as recommendations are concerned. Then I'm just going to educate. It doesn't make a difference.
So now we've come to the hour. We have to ask you the hard question.
Here it is.
And the hard question is, most people like myself, I'm a parent. And I remember myself as a young, impressionable girl.
Right.
So well,
you're
now,
still a young, impressionable girl.
Well, thank you.
Listen,
so much.
Don't sell yourself short. What are we talking about here?
But you get my drift.
I don't know what we're talking about yet.
Well, we're talking about young people
right?
being exposed to the option of using cannabis when they are not suffering from Tourette's, when they are just great young people with a great hope and a future. Do you believe that cannabis can hold them back? Do you believe it puts them on the couch and sticks them to the couch? Do you believe it kills their dreams?
I definitely think there are strains that will cause couch lock. I definitely think there are strains that will keep you from succeeding. And if you are that person who are going to use those strains, yes. But if you as a parent was educated enough to be able to say to them, look, dial down the THC, dial up the CBD, get a little bit of the couch lock, but get the medicinal benefits of the CBD so that we can now practice preventative medicine, because now you're giving CBD in the body all the time. You're making your body whole again. You don't need to go crazy on the THC. You don't need to be sitting there stuck on the couch. How about you get a little bit of the THC, focus on the CBD, get a little bit of what you're looking for, but get the medical effects. And the reason why that could work is because if you educate you as a parent, you sit down with them and say, look, you're going heavy THC, you're going too much of the indica, let's try a hybrid, sativa, indica, hybrid, 60-40 with an 18-1 or a 12-1 CBD to THC ratio. You do what you want to do, you're going to get the boost, but you're still going to get the medical.
Tell us a little bit about that. Indica, sativa, hybrid. Okay, I have cancer. I'm fighting it, and I'm taking all the prescriptive, the radiation. I'm doing everything that they're giving me. What do I need?
I have no idea for several reasons. Number one, we can't do research. We're not allowed do a prospective, randomized, double-blind study that would give us any of these answers. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because I can't even write a prescription, and it's only a recommendation letter, I tell my patients, you're going to be kissing a lot of frogs before you find the strain that's your prince. I mean, that's just the way it is, because my hands are tied. I can teach you as much as I can teach you, but at the end of the day, my hands are pretty tight.
So before we end this show.
Again, you can say this?
I want to know. What do you think are the best delivery systems? I mean, do you like the vaping? What do you think about the vaping?
As someone who does not use cannabis, I have no idea what the best delivery system is. My basic speech to all my patients is, it doesn't matter how you get the cannabis into your body. It matters that you get the cannabis into your body. Doesn't matter to me what strain you use, you're going to find the strain that works for you. The advantage to vaping, which I think personally is the best way to go, because you can titrate it rapidly, you know when to stop, in case the psychotropic, psychoactive effects of THC are too much for you, you stop immediately, you know what's going on. My biggest concern was that people who first start using cannabis, they said, I don't want to smoke, I just want to use edibles. That is the wrong way to go. Edibles, you are on for a 5-hour ride that you have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. It's like getting hit in the head with a hammer, and then you're sitting there. It's always the same. It takes 45 minutes to kick in, as opposed to if you vape, you know immediately. It's always the same thing. I don't feel it. I still don't feel it. Please take me to the emergency room. It's always the same thing. Every time.
That's horrible, but you're absolutely right. Okay, last question. What are the best practices in using cannabis medicinally? What do you think are the best
practices? What does practices mean to you?
Well, practices would be, are you using it every day? Are you incinerating it? Does it become hot? Are you dabbing? Are you just taking a dab? Are you using shatter or resin? I mean, just for the benefit of my audience. I mean, there are so many.
Here's my concern with any of the concentrates.
Yeah.
Is pesticides. Right now, there are 154 pesticides that have been used on the cannabis plant. And you may get a strain that says pesticide-free. They're not telling you how many pesticides they're testing for. So let's say you go to a lab that only tested for 5 pesticides. That means there's 149 that could be in there. The issue is going to be, when you concentrate it, if you have not tested for all 154 pesticides, you now have a concentrated dose of pesticide. We will, based upon the concentrates, see our first death, because not of the cannabis, because of the pesticides. That's my concern.
So are you saying we haven't had any cannabis deaths?
The only cannabis death that we have had has been someone jumping out of a window because they had a mind-altering effect to this. Cannabis by itself, pure cannabis, has not caused one death. There's a thing in medicine called the lethal dose 50. That amount of medicine you take 50% of time that will cause you to die. OxyContin, let's say it's 25, 30 milligrams. You take 25 milligrams, 30 milligrams of OxyContin, 50% of the time you'll die. The theoretical lethal dose 50 for cannabis, you'd have to smoke 30 pounds in 20 minutes.
Impossible.
Right. But the more you concentrate it, you're going to lower that time.
I see. All right. So please, give your website.
The website is drdoctorfrank.com.
That's very easy.
It should be. Everything about cannabis should be easy.
Absolutely.
It's a plant. It's grown in your garden next to the cardamom and the parsley. We've turned it into this demon weed. It's nonsense. It's nonsense.
Absolutely. Dr. Frank, thank you so much for being a guest on LA Miracle Cure. I'm your host, Barbara, and we are on America Out Loud.